You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Katoa, ko Jemima Houston, tōku ingoa, no mai haere mai, ki te wai, mō tēnei rā. Kia ora, and welcome to The Wire for Wednesday, the 25th of August. My name is Jemima, and I'm hosting today because Zazie and Francis, who would normally host The Wednesday Wire, are at home in their bubbles, but still bringing you some awesome pieces for the show today. E whai akine, coming up on the show, Francis talks with Tali Williams, Secretary for Retail Finance and Commerce at First Union, about the impact of the lockdown on supermarket workers. We then have our regular segment, Dear Science, with Marcus Jones this week. Francis and Marcus discuss the waning effectiveness of COVID vaccines against the Delta variant, massive volcanoes which could cool Earth, and a genetic pattern which offers clues about the evolution of homosexuality. That is a very long piece today, so I don't know whether we'll get through all of it, but we'll give you a good amount of Dear Science today. Zazie speaks with Kerry Nuku from the New Zealand Nurses Organisation and Senior Nurse about nurses and other healthcare workers working in the renewed COVID-19 climate here in New Zealand. And finally, Zazie has her regular talk with ACT's Brooke Van Velden, where she talks to Brooke about the Parliament's sittings being suspended for the week and a general update on New Zealand's Level 4 lockdown. He aho o whakaaro, I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces. So tuku pātui mai. You can send me through a text on 5395 or Wire Mai Rānei, give me a call in studio on 309 3879. Also, after the show, koe e wariwari e ahi ana koutou te whakarongo ki ēnei kōrero anō he pakihiri rokiroki marunga i te pae tukutuku o Irirangi Poho. Me kaere ki 95 BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95 BFM website. 95bfm.com is the place to go. Head to the BCast page, head to The Wire, and you can see all the bits and pieces that have been created in this lockdown moment we're in over the last week, if you missed any of them. So do check that out. You can also check us out on our social media, 95BFM News. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The news team that is the part of the news team that is responsible for the social media is keeping that updated for you as well. So if that's easier for you, head to those pages and give us a follow and give us a like, and you can see what we're up to in this lockdown time. Anyway, big old show today, so let's crack into it.
Irirangi Poho, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
Since the current Level 4 lockdown began this time last week, supermarket workers around the country have been under pressure from a continual stream of customers and high stock demands. This morning, Francis spoke with Tali Williams, Secretary for Retail Finance and Commerce at First Union, the union that represents many of the country's supermarket workers. They spoke about the pressure supermarket workers are under and the union's push for living wage for essential workers. Francis began by asking what life is like for supermarket workers at the moment.
So what we're hearing from workers in supermarkets is that it's an extremely stressful time for them to be working. First of all, we're still dealing with the virus that's generally, you know, still a bit of the unknown. They've got streams of people coming in through the door that they're needing to deal with every day rather than just a handful of people like the rest of us who get to stay in our bubbles. So, yeah, a really stressful time. Unfortunately, you know, there's still that stuff going on for people where customers are coming in like really stressed out for their own reasons and taking it out on supermarket staff, whether that's giving them a bit of abuse for the fact that staff can't pack their bags for hygiene reasons, or because there's not certain products on the shelves because of that sort of product depletion right now. So yeah, it's not a nice time for them, eh?
And are you seeing a reduced number of available supermarket workers because of the lockdown?
what we're starting to see happen is because people need to stay home to isolate if they have been tested because they're a close contact or because they're sick or because they have vulnerable people in their bubble, they need to stay home, or they're vulnerable themselves. That means they're not able to be out there on the front line, and therefore those people left behind on the front line are, you know, struggling even more because of the staffing levels kind of left behind. And we're really conscious of that and really speaking to the supermarkets quite a lot about that and monitoring that, because it's extremely important that there are safe staffing levels in those supermarkets which remain open. So it may be in some situations, for example, that if there's not enough staff to safely open, that a supermarket may need to close or may need to go online only or something along those lines. But it's extremely important that a constant check is kept on that, because there's just too much risk for those people left behind trying to run those stores when they've got, you know, massive lines out the door, queues, angry customers, issues with getting products out. It's extremely stressful for those people.
And just sort of picking up on that, do you think that currently supermarket staff are overworked? Are you hearing that?
Yeah, so we're hearing a lot from when I've asked people, what's the biggest, what's top of mind for you guys at the moment out there on the front line? The response is always to do with the stress levels involved and the fact that they're needing to do a lot, and a lot under a stressful situation, you know, having to do the work, cover the work of others who are not able to be there.
Do you think supermarket workers feel supported by their employers?
I think that there's still a lot of work that has to happen in terms of making sure there's safe staffing levels in the supermarket. So that's something that's been a massive campaign for our union within the supermarkets with our Healthy Staff and Healthy Stores campaign. You know, staffing levels are a health and safety issue, even more so during a pandemic, and making sure that there are the staffing levels required to keep people safe, to keep people feeling secure at work as well. We do find, for example, that if there's less staff around, staff report more instances of being abused or awful things happening to them, and they feel less secure when there's less people around, not to mention the health and safety concerns wrapped around if there's not enough people to do the job, you've got people running around, and more mistakes get made, more health and safety risks come about. So there's plenty of reasons why there needs to be sufficient staffing levels, and we've really put the pressure on the supermarkets regarding that over recent times.
And can we move quickly to talk about the vaccines? So You've just been moved to prioritise supermarket workers. Do you think that supermarket workers should have been prioritised earlier for vaccines?
Yeah, I think it would have been good if they would have been prioritised earlier, but we're really pleased that they're prioritised now. And we know a number of people who have already put their names on the list booked in to be vaccinated. It's all underway, which is really good and extremely important for workers who've been waiting on this moment.
And finally, I guess, what would you like to say to listeners who are thinking of heading to the supermarket today to do a lockdown shop?
I think the important thing is to bear in mind that these workers in supermarkets are under a lot of stress and pressure themselves. They're also really nervous about being, you know, exposed to the virus by people who are coming in a constant stream of a queue. Just be mindful of those workers. It's not their fault if there's not enough products. It's not their fault if there's not enough staff doing the best that they can. And it's really important to be mindful of that. We hear as well a lot of anxiety about customers not wearing masks. Really important to wear a mask when you go into a supermarket. It's really not fair on the workers if you don't. If you've got a handful of people without masks in a day, even that is so much more exposure than is warranted. So really important to wear a mask to show your respect for supermarket workers' health and well-being as well. There's just one other thing that I wanted to comment on too. Both the Foodstuffs and Countdown have implemented a 10% bonus for the level 4 lockdown for workers on the front line. This is really great, but we think it's really important to lock in that lockdown pay and value essential workers by paying them at least the living wage. We've always maintained that since the first lockdown, that essential workers should be paid at least the living wage. For example, supermarket workers, bus drivers, etc., those on the front line. You know, we've made some progress with wages and Countdown and in some of the pack and saves, but there's still a long way to go to get those workers to living wages. We rely on essential workers to stay on the front line while we're at home in our bubbles, and they should be valued for the fact that they're out there doing this important you know, frontline work and allowing us to stay back at home, the least we can do is ensure they have living wages. So that's a really important message, I think, to supermarket employers out there as well, and to customers, you know, supporting living wages for supermarket workers.
And so the union is working quite hard to push that at the moment?
Yeah, there's been, before this most current lockdown, been something that we've been pushing with the major supermarket players and across all retail, but most importantly for essential workers, we just shouldn't have those people in a position of being on the front line during a pandemic and not even being able to cover the important cost of living that they have back home.
That was Tali Williams, First Union Secretary for Retail, Finance and Commerce, speaking with Francis about supermarket workers under lockdown pressure. He aho o whakaro, I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces that we've got on the show today. So tukapātui mai, you can send me through a text on 5395 or give me a call in studio on 309 3879. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM. I'm Jemima. I'm holding the reins for Zazie and Francis, who have produced the show from home today. We'll be right back after this.
This is a COVID-19 announcement. If you're heading out, take your face covering. For anyone 12 or over, it's mandatory to wear a face covering when accessing necessities like groceries and medical care. You should take one with you and wear it whenever you leave home. Remember to respect those who can't wear one due to a health condition. Unite against COVID-19.
Southbound Records, New Zealand's largest range of new vinyl, a fantastic curated selection of secondhand, plus all the accessories you need. Brushes, cleaners, sleeves, crates and more. Their in-store experts can help you out, whatever genre you're into. So support your local and head into Southbound today. Southbound Records, your vinyl specialist. Pop in at 132 Simon Street or order online.
My name is Chris, and I'm here to say I'm looking for a flatmate in a loon that's grey. You gotta be cool, and you gotta be tough. You gotta be a vegan, and no pets or smokers.
Room in Freeman's Bay Cottage. Me, urban sophisticate, wine expert, French cinema aficionado. You, educated, tidy, silent.
Room in flat, Mount Eden. Text Dave.
Whoever or wherever you're after, the 95BFM Accommodation Guide is here for you. Email your listing to accommodationguide@95bfm.com. The 95BFM Accommodation Guide, every Thursday on drive and online at 95bfm.com.
I don't know how to say this, Betelgeuse star?
You're not a child of the 80s. If you were, you would know the film with a similar name. The star is Betelgeuse.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Wire.
You're on The Wire on 95BFM. As I've said, I'm Jemima and I'm hosting the Wednesday Wire for Zazie and Francis today while we're in lockdown.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
This week on Dear Science, Francis was joined by AUT Professor Marcus Jones, where they talked about the effectiveness of COVID vaccines against the Delta variant, massive volcanoes cooling the earth, and the genetic pattern which offers clues to the evolution of homosexuality. Here they are now.
So let's begin with this waning effectiveness of COVID vaccines against Delta. Tell me about that.
Okay, yeah, so the Delta variant has obviously caused a lot of issues around the world because it seems to be a lot more infectious than previous variants. And we are obviously seeing the effects of that now in New Zealand with the current outbreak. A study or preprint actually just came out of, I think, Oxford, studying the Pfizer vaccine and also the AstraZeneca vaccine to see how effective they are against the Delta variant and also how their protection drops away over time. And it turns out that they are both pretty effective, the Pfizer one probably more so, but both of their protection does drop away quite significantly over a relatively short period of time. And I sort of hesitate to say this, but this was a study done at Oxford, comparing literally millions of COVID data or of COVID test results, and whether people have been vaccinated or not, and which vaccine that they had. And the vaccine made by Pfizer was 92% effective at keeping people from developing a high viral load, and that was 14 days after the second dose. So that's sort of in line with what we knew, or what we thought we knew. But the vaccine's effectiveness fell to 90%, then 85%, and then 78% after 30, 60, and 90 days, respectively. So after 90 days, the effectiveness of the vaccine at keeping people from developing a high viral load, in other words, high concentration of virus in their bodies, was 78%. Now that's still pretty high, and it's actually higher than the AstraZeneca vaccine after 14 days. So it's very good, and it shouldn't deter people from getting vaccinated. But it does point at maybe we can tweak the strategy of how we're vaccinating people, and with what and with what technologies we're using to vaccinate people. The AstraZeneca vaccine turned out was only 69% effective against a high viral load 14 days after the second dose, and that fell to 61% after 90 days. Yeah. But the paper does say the drop in effectiveness shouldn't be a cause for alarm. Both of these vaccines, two doses, are still doing really well against Delta. And that's really the take-home message here.
So we should still get vaccinated.
We should definitely still get vaccinated. There is some idea that once you're vaccinated, you're not going to get infected, but that's not necessarily the case. You can still get infected. It's just that you won't develop a very high viral load, so it's likely that you won't develop serious symptoms. Anyone who thinks that if they get infected, having been vaccinated, they can't transmit, also, that isn't likely to be true. So you can still transmit the virus. And this is just, again, this is why it's really important that we get as many people vaccinated as possible, so that although the vaccine will be in our population eventually, but if we are all vaccinated, then we won't all be going to hospital. We'll be getting maybe a little bit sick, but just not very sick. We can still transmit it, just like you can still transmit the flu if you have the flu vaccine, but it's going to dramatically lessen the impact of the disease.
Yeah. Right, so it's all about reducing our risk.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. Let's move on to these massive volcanoes which could cool the Earth. Tell me about that.
Okay, so we've all seen volcanoes, and there's not much, very few forces on Earth more powerful than a large volcanic eruption. And at the most potent, volcanoes inject millions of tons of particles that can block sunlight. Then they inject those high into the atmosphere. And that can cool the Earth, and in some cases for nearly 5 years, endangering crops, and leading to sort of years without summer. The most recent major volcanic explosion, which was the Mount Pinatubo explosion in 1991, which was in the Philippines, that caused a temporary half degree Celsius drop in global temperatures. So that was a measurable drop in temperatures just from one pretty big volcanic eruption. But it's becoming increasingly clear that even these monumental forces are being altered by human-driven climate change. For instance, declining ice cover in Arctic and Antarctic regions can trigger more frequent eruptions near the poles. And also an increasingly layered ocean will allow more volcano-induced cooling to linger at the Earth's surface. And now a recent study suggests that increased greenhouse gases will help the plumes, these big sort of plumes of gases from these large eruptions, reach higher, spread faster, and reflect more sunlight, causing more abrupt and extreme cooling. Now, we're talking about global warming, and this is cooling. Probably inducing volcanoes is not a good way to solve global warming. We don't want more catastrophic events occurring in our atmosphere. So before humanity really started altering our planet. Volcanoes were one of the biggest climate players. They were the things that really controlled, you know, changes in the climate. Over the long term, they emitted a lot of carbon dioxide, which caused warming. But in the short term, they also emitted sulfur gases, which reacted with water to form highly reflective particles called sulfates that triggered spells of global cooling. Yeah. And you can see that in ice cores, these dark smudged lines in ice cores that give us the best evidence of these of what the weather did and the sort of the reflections caused by these sulfates in prehistory. But the opposite is also true. It turns out the climate can have a big impact on volcanoes. And in this study, some researchers combined computer simulations of volcanic eruptions with a global climate model, and they simulated the response to plumes from sort of medium-sized and really big volcanoes in historical conditions or in historical climate conditions, and also in sort of worst-case conditions that could be we could experience in about 70, 80 years from now, in about 2100. When the Earth is predicted to have warmed quite rapidly. And the researchers found two sort of opposing countervailing trends. Normally just one or two mid-sized volcanic eruptions shoot through the troposphere. So the atmosphere we talk about in different layers, and one of the lower layers is called the troposphere. And this is where most clouds are formed. This is where there's a lot of turbulence. Above that is the stratosphere. And normally just one or two mid-sized volcanic eruptions shoot through the troposphere each year, bypassing all of sort of the clouds and the Earth weather and reaching the stratosphere, which is much calmer, much drier, which is the level above. And as reflective particles spread through the stratosphere, they cause this spurt of global cooling. But when the troposphere warms, which it's doing at the moment, it expands in height. And eventually that puts the stratosphere out of reach of these eruptions. So it's like if you were playing basketball and suddenly people raised up the hoop, the umpires raised the hoop up a few inches and made it that much harder to score a basket. The story changes with really large volcanoes, though. These really large volcanoes can burst through the troposphere even if the troposphere has been warmed, and their gases would actually eventually reach higher and travel faster in the present climate, amplifying their cooling effect by about 15 or 20%.
Oh wow so
for the mid-sized volcanoes, they're not going to have as big a cooling effect, but the big volcanoes, if they can punch through the troposphere, it turns out that the conditions in the stratosphere are such that their cooling effect would be magnified. So there's sort of two countervailing things here. Now this is really interesting because it shows the effect of, you know, obviously of volcanoes on global climate, but it's also showing the effect of climate on volcanoes, which is something that you don't normally really think about, how would climate control volcanoes, but it turns out that that's the case, and global warming yet again has some potentially catastrophic effects if we get major eruptions.
Yeah, it seems to be a bit of a recurring theme.
Oh yes.
And there's
these
not
much articles. Good about it. Yeah.
No, because we sort of need to sit off some giant volcanoes to combat climate change, although that doesn't seem like a very practical
yeah, let's not solution. Let's not.
No.
Volcanoes are really good.
Yes, they are. Let's move on to this genetic pattern, which offers clues about the evolution of...
Sorry, Frances, I'm going to have to cut her off there because this is quite a long interview, but a good one. If you are interested in learning about that final topic, which is a study into the genetic pattern, which offers clues as to the evolution of homosexuality, then absolutely check out the BCasts page on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. The full piece will be podcasted there.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
So, yes, that was Francis speaking to Marcus Jones for this week's Dear Science. You're on The Wire on 95BFM. I'm Jemima, and I'm not Francis or Zazi, who have been producing an awesome show for you from home today. So let's move on to this next piece. COVID-19 has turned everyone's lives upside down, whether that be working from home, having to update safety measures at essential working places, or waiting in line to get a test or vaccination. Everyone is having to adapt. As Francis focused on the impact of the lockdown on supermarket workers, today Zazi is looking at nurses and healthcare workers and how the lockdown has impacted them. First off, Zazi speaks with Kerry Nuku from the New Zealand Nurses Organisation. She begins by asking Kerry if, since the resurgence of COVID-19, there has been an added strain on healthcare workers.
Yes, certainly there has been. The health system has been under pressure for many, many years. Some of that has been because of understaffing or chronic understaffing. So absolutely, with the impact of COVID, the Delta variant, it certainly again put the pressure on the health system.
Are you satisfied that the operating protocols are sufficient to protect healthcare workers?
Look, absolutely. I think, as you've seen, that we've had a government that has responded really quickly to the variant, and we're in level four now, where the best thing to do is to stop as much as we can transmission, ensure that the public do wear their masks when they're out. And that gives some time for the health sector to take a breath and to ensure that they're adequately resourced with the PPE gear that there is necessary to ensure that they're kept safe. So I think what we've seen is some policies and procedures that were put in last year. What we are hoping that as things evolve, as we know more about COVID, that we also develop and fine-tune the policies and procedures that we put in place and expect health professionals to work towards.
On Friday, the 20th of August, the Ministry of Health issued an exemption for essential health workers from the need to fully self-isolate as long as certain conditions were met. What are these conditions, and does this mean that healthcare workers who live with close contacts are still being told to go to work?
So certainly we can understand why the government or why the Director General would put in such amendments to Section 70. Some of that required us, first of all, to understand its implications or what it actually meant. And while it was introduced on the 20th, what we saw is that it was being interpreted really quickly and some DHBs were using that. What it does mean is that for essential healthcare workers, which are essential to ensure that the healthcare system continues to operate, what we've seen is that providing that the healthcare worker has had both shots of the vaccine, that anybody in their household has tested negative, and that there is nobody in your household that is sick, then there is an exemption that you can go back to work. That's fully covered and acknowledged by the Director General of Health. Now, we believe that that was introduced for further on down the track when there might be some need to ensure that healthcare workers keep the system going. But what we did see in the early days is that there was a difference in how some district health boards were applying it, and that created confusion for our members.
So what were some of these different ways it was being interpreted?
So what we were hearing is that some of our members that went or had been identified as a close contact were staying home, self-isolating. That was agreed by the district health board leadership or their charge nurses or team leaders. And then the next day they were getting called back to work before they had had a result of a negative test. So there was just some differences, and the nurses were really wanting to ensure that they weren't putting any patients at risk or harm.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, nurses feel conflicted because they want to keep people safe by staying home, but also going to work in case they do need more staffing. So in terms of that kind of relationship, you know, conflict, what is the best move forward, or what is the best thing to do for a nurse or healthcare worker?
What we've always said is that nurses and any healthcare worker should have access to the PPE gear that makes them feel safe when they're at work. And clarity of policies and procedures and any introduction of new changes need to ensure that we've had a conversation with the health union so that we know that our members are fully understanding of the impact of that, that there've been conversations with unions and professional bodies to ensure that we're really clear and that we can all be on the same page with the introduction of any new changes. But having certainty, feeling safe when you're at work as part of the key things that we all need to be aware of, whether you're or not you're a member of the community and wanting to make sure you're safe going to the supermarket, or whether you're a nurse and wanting to feel safe when you go to work. Everybody deserves that level of respect and openness.
And healthcare workers have already been speaking out specifically, you know, about unsafe staffing for quite some time now. Have the level 4 lockdown conditions put additional pressure on this?
It's a difference, really. It's a reorganisation of some of that pressure. So what we've seen is hospitals stop elective surgery, and elective surgery on any given day just put the hospitals under a certain amount of pressure. So there is not that same level of pressure when it comes to some of those points, but certainly the frontline workers, there are people that have gone out from hospital environments and are working on the front line doing either vaccinations or standing up the swabbing centres. So as you should see, there is a redistribution of some of that pressure points, but certainly, and let's hope this never happens, once we start to get too many patients in the system, it puts a lot of pressure within the hospital setting, and therefore our issues around short staffing or chronic understaffing, it might start to show.
And last Thursday, hospital nurses and midwives were due to go on strike. Why did the strike not proceed?
I think it's a no-brainer. So we all knew that as a country, we have to work together. And so unselfishly, the nurses made a decision, or our members made a decision, not to strike and not to put the system under any more pressure and not to put communities. So rising up to make sure that our communities were safe is part of what we do. So the decision to make to cancel the strike was not because we'd met the conditions or the members were entirely happy with any offers that had been made at that point, but to rise up and do what we need to do as a country to work together to combat COVID-19 and to get on top of this really quickly and really early.
You're saying that it doesn't mean that the requirements or the things you are wanting or that nurses are needing have been met. What is the plan forward now in terms of addressing those things?
Yeah, so our industrial team and negotiating team will go back to the table. I think it's important to realise that this issue hasn't been resolved. It's been suspended in the interim while we deal with the thing that's facing us, you know, front on, COVID. But our members, once we get back to the table, our industrial team will pick that up, and I'm sure that there'll be further action down the road. But the important thing at the moment is we try and get on top of COVID-19. And as I said before, that the issues around chronic understaffing, care capacity, demand management, those are still live issues for our members.
If there is anything the public can do to get behind nurses and other healthcare workers to show their support, what are some examples or things that they can do during this time?
Look, we really need to echo the call from the ministry is to stay at home. If you're out in public, wear a face mask. Just be kind and realise that this everybody's in this together. Everybody is anxious. Everybody is concerned. But if we work together to ensure that we're getting our swabs, we're getting our vaccinations, we're respecting other people in the community, and that is by making sure that we do the hand washing, wear our masks, and just understand that this is taking all of country to work together to make sure that we get through this together. So the call for that to the public is let's just keep making sure that we are in this waka together. We're all dependent on one another to get through this together.
Zazi then went on to speak with a senior nurse on their thoughts on COVID-19 and the current working conditions.
What is it like working under current conditions with the Delta variant now in the community?
I think winter time within any area, it's always busy. So you get your common winter viruses. And currently with Delta, it continues to be not as busy, because people are staying at home. However, it's pretty much the same. Bar having the lockdown and bar wearing masks all the time and all of those things. But I mean, we've been really, really swamped anyway with the winter viruses. So
in terms of COVID-19, there hasn't been too much of an added strain on healthcare workers or nurses?
The COVID is one thing. It is what it is. At the moment, it's steady. Again, I don't work in areas that I see a lot of those patients coming in, so I can't really talk from that angle. But nurses in general, which you know before the Delta hit here, nurses are tired, they are worn out. We've just been pressured a lot. And so that continues in a sense, even though we're a tiny bit quieter. And so the Delta is one thing, but it's more what has been. It's not really, we've been under the pump for a very long time, regardless of a Delta coming. So it's kind of one of those things that it continues. And we called off our strike last week because of the outbreak. And so, but we were ready to go out there and strike again. But in relation to nursing in general, it's already under the pump. Nurses are exhausted, they're worn out, tired. And I think with anything last year with the first lockdown, it's the unknown. So it's always the unknown. Like, you don't know how a population is going to respond to a certain virus. Yes, or we can look around the world and yes, we can see those things. But again, you've got to take into so much more consideration of, you know, your climate, your population, your cultural side of things. So it's always the unknown. It's always the, okay, you sit and you wait. So if we go back to Delta, it's kind of like, what's going to happen next? And I mean, you know, we are constantly prepping. So we are not only thinking, we've prepped, we always prep for things. So we're constantly changing, evolving, moving. You pull out your old stuff that you had last time, but now it's a game changer because of Delta, and it's the difference because it's spreading so much. And I always think it's the unknown, like we don't know what we're going to see as of yet. You just kind of sit and wait.
What measures or what additional measures have been put in place in order to keep nurses safe?
Look, I mean, it's always looking about your environment. It's always looking about, so where do you put patients and where's that going to go and what does that look like and stuff like that. So that's that type of prepping. And does this ward become like that or does that become like this? Or, you know, so there's always that element. So it's the environmental. But with nurses, look, I mean, it's quite interesting because we are short-staffed. That's the reality. And nurses don't pop out of nowhere. They're there, and they're being pulled into vaccination, they're being pulled to MIQ. So we're stretched because of that kind of thing going on. And for nurses, we just have to carry on like we do. Like, that's a strength that we have. We might moan a little bit along the way, but you kind of just have to carry through because you're there for, yes, you're being paid and yes, you're that, but you're there for your patients. You're there to look after people in their time of need. And I think that never goes away. So you always just continue on, because that's what you do. If you're in an emergency, and what do? You don't stop. You continue till the outcome hopefully gets to where you want to get to. So it's that constant, just continue on. Yeah.
In your opinion, do you believe enough support is being given to nurses and healthcare workers?
Yeah, I think that there is. I personally feel that from my position and where I work and stuff like that, yes, absolutely. I would just like to see more stuff. I just like to see more nurses. And that's to do with bringing nurses in from overseas. It's to do, you know, we can't have those numbers. You know, I'd like to see that improvement. This is the tricky thing. So we're looking at the big picture, right? So with the government and that and how they're, with people coming in and how certain people can't come in, that all affects that. But they've made that decision for those reasons. And I don't, like, you know, I don't work in the logistics of that. So, but yeah, it is tough. It is tough with, you know, the pressures of having numerous patients and not having enough nurses there, yeah, to look after them as need be.
So those two interviews, firstly, Kiri Nuku from the New Zealand Nurses Organisation and then a senior nurse currently working during level 4 lockdown, talking about nurses and other healthcare workers working in the renewed COVID-19 climate here in New Zealand. You're on The Wire on 95BFM. I'm Jemima. I'm your host for today. He aho ofakaro. I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces. So tukapatui mai, send me through a text. 5395 is the number. You know that. We'll be right back after a wee break.
Oh, what a beautiful moment. The sun's setting all purple and gold. Oh.
You can still see where your dad hired a plane to skywrite. Actually, I am proud of you.
Yeah. I wish I had somewhere to capture this memory. Just, you know, a static image to immortalise this moment.
Look! 1,000 butterflies.
Take a picture. It'll last longer. And whatever your level, you'll take better ones with Pro Gear. 100% camera, 0% bullshit. Pro Gear, 3 Railway Street, Newmarket. Or go to progear.co.nz.
The Walters Prize 2021 exhibition is on now to September 5th. Featuring the work of nominated artists Fiona Amundsen, Sonia Lacey, Mata'aho Collective and Sriwana Spong, the Walters Prize is Aotearoa New Zealand's contemporary art prize. Discover the work of this year's winner, just announced. The Walters Prize 2021 at Auckland Art Gallery, Toi o Tāmaki, on now to September 5th. Entry is free. Find out more at aucklandartgallery.com.
This is a COVID-19 announcement. How to exercise at alert level 4. You can still exercise, but only if you're alone or with people in your bubble. Remember to stay within your neighborhood and keep at least 2 meters away from others. Playgrounds are closed. You should also avoid places where people may gather. Make sure you avoid any exercise that could require emergency services if you got into trouble, like surfing or tramping. Unite against COVID-19.
Future sounds from the underground.
The hottest new tracks from Aotearoa and around the world.
Totally Wired.
Sounds from up to 2 weeks in the future.
Next month, even.
Some of these tracks are like 2023 vibes, bruv.
A great amount of energy.
Totally Wired with Jess Vu. Tomorrow's music today. Saturdays, 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. Only on 95BFM. Thanks to Flying Out. flyingout.co.nz.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with ACT Party Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden. Yes, it is that time again. On Monday, the Prime Minister announced that the sitting of Parliament will be suspended for a week due to COVID-19 restrictions. Other political parties since have spoken publicly about this decision, so Zazi asked Brooke Van Velden from the ACT Party what their opinion was in a little more detail. She began by asking Brooke if the ACT Party thinks it was the right decision that Parliament sittings be suspended for a week.
Absolutely not. So what has really occurred here is not just that Parliament is suspended, it's that democracy is being cancelled. So if you look at it this way, the Prime Minister, under the Director General of Health's guidance, which he would also get from the Prime Minister, has unilaterally decided that politicians shouldn't be able to ask the Prime Minister questions about her own response to the COVID-19 recovery and the Delta outbreak. Instead, what they've offered up is select committees as a way of questioning. But that's not an adequate way of going about Parliament, because all you're doing there is that the government has a majority on nearly all of the select committees. And if we see yesterday, the first examples in the Finance and Expenditure Committee, when the Minister of Finance came in for questioning, we had Labour MPs asking the Finance Minister what we consider patsy questions or easy questions to fill up time, so opposition MPs didn't have as much time to ask questions of the government about their funding priorities. And that's very, very specific just to that meeting then. I think it's outrageous that we're in a situation where, you know, you can go to the supermarket and be around hundreds of other people going about essential services, but the Prime Minister has deemed that having half a dozen or so MPs in a chamber, socially distanced, with masks in Wellington, would be a health and safety issue because of the Delta virus. And you have to ask the question, is it actually about health and safety, or is it about the fact that they don't want to be held accountable for their recovery?
Well, Parliament sittings are conducted in a closed environment where other staff members are required to come in. And a spokesman for the Prime Minister said, the last thing you want is 120 people converging from all parts of New Zealand into Wellington. With the Delta variant being more infectious and transmissible, is it not fair for the government to be more sensible and cautious?
I think in the middle of a pandemic, that's the time when you actually do want politicians doing their job and asking questions. How is it possible that, you know, we've gone 18 months since that first lockdown and we still don't have any plan or strategy to deal with COVID outbreaks in a better way than we did then? How is our contact tracing going? Well, it turns out from questions from David Seymour yesterday in the Health Committee, that only half of what they consider to be the very close contacts have actually had their tests returned. That's just not good enough. Why is it taking so long? How is it possible that only 3% of the people who were cases were in fact double vaccinated? Our vaccine program has been so slow to roll out. There are so many really important questions that us as politicians need to ask the government as representatives of the people who are currently being locked down. What is their strategy? Instead, we've got people saying, oh no, you can't possibly have people coming into Parliament to ask those questions. Let's cancel democracy instead. Sure, I can take the point that maybe 120 MPs shouldn't come to Wellington. Well, we already have a large number of MPs currently in Wellington. Even if you didn't need 120 of them, we could still have at least a dozen. Even that seems too much of a health and safety risk for politicians of the government's side. But really, you have to ask the question, how is it possible that you can get ice cream delivered to your door? Excuse my French, but you can still get sex toys delivered via the mail. But you can't have 12 MPs sitting in a chamber asking questions of the Prime Minister.
Well, the announcement on Monday said that there would still be an opportunity for the opposition to question the government through appearing before Parliament's multiple select committees. What is ACT's issue with this? Because this would still create conversation and still allow these opposing views to come forward.
Our issue with what we have currently happening, which is a range of different select committees having ministers come in for an hour or 2 hours at a time, scheduled out in advance throughout this week, is that a pandemic is actually very dynamic. You know, it's not possible to have true transparency when you're looking at the vaccine rollout on a Tuesday, but then nothing about vaccines is on the agenda for the rest of the week. It could be, in fact, that we have huge news about vaccines today or tomorrow or on Friday, but that has not been scheduled in. The other problem that we have with it is that it's led by the government. Most of the committees that are being put in place have somebody who's chairing the meeting who is stopping questions from the opposition, even when the minister themselves wants to answer the question. And we saw that yesterday, people butting in, wanting to ask what we consider those patsy questions, those easy questions, so opposition members don't have as much time to actually answer the question.
But if
what the ACT Party suggested as a solution to this, if Parliament really couldn't sit, was bringing back that Epidemic Response Committee, which we knew worked really, really well last year. And the reason why it worked is it sat every day. There were a range of people who came in. It was led by the opposition rather than the government.
So the Epidemic Response Committee that consisted of 11 members in total, this time round, there will be multiple select committees that are able to meet, as well as more different ministers with different MPs asking questions. What if these committees, you know, provide a wider and more accurate depiction of the public views, or in fact offer more opposing views?
Well, I don't think they do at all. I think what it ends up being is a chance for ministers to say, look, you've heard from me, but the chairs of the committees not to actually allow members of the opposition the time to ask the questions that they really want. And the real issue here is that the Prime Minister doesn't have to front on any of it.
Would you prefer that, you know, the Epidemic Response Committee be reinstated, or would you prefer that there would be no suspending of Parliament sittings at all?
Well, our real priority is that we would consider democracy to be essential. Can't have questioning of the government and its strategy as essential. I think that's wrong. So yes, my first priority is that I believe politicians should be able to ask questions in Parliament as they're elected to do, to represent the people who are currently got questions and are being locked down in their homes wondering what is the future going to look like. But I'd also say if we cannot have that, then our second preference is for that Epidemic Response Committee, because we know that it needs to be led by the opposition asking questions of the government rather than the government's own friends asking questions of itself.
As Delta numbers continue to increase in New Zealand, isn't it important to explore more remote and safer ways of working?
I think there is the ability to do a lot of work a little bit remotely. We've seen that. But ultimately, there are things that Parliament has to do. I mean, Parliament has to sit, firstly, to start to pass the budget in a few weeks. It has to sit in order to have the COVID orders that help us be in the situation that we're currently in. These are things that Parliament has to do by sitting. And so there is talk, I know, of Parliament coming back at some time. It's just a question of, is this the government only wanting to come back so it can pass the things it wants to do and not coming back for the opposition and not coming back to be held accountable?
And moving on from Parliament being suspended to lockdown in general, it has now been a week since New Zealand went into Level 4 lockdown, and all of New Zealand will remain in Level 4 until the 27th of August, and Auckland will remain in Level 4 until the 31st. Do you feel that we should remain in Level 4 lockdown until those dates, or do you think we should already be moving to lift some of the restrictions?
Oh, look, I think it's a little even bit more complex than that, because we don't have as much information as we need. We need to know far more about whether those close contacts have been traced, why it's taking so long for people to get their results, and how, at what point do we actually start making those decisions? These are the questions that the opposition needs to be putting to the government to make sure we have a plan and we know what decision they're basing, you know, whether we should remove restrictions on.
That was the ACT Party's Brooke van Velden talking to Zazie about the Parliament sittings being suspended for the week, as well as an update on the party's opinion regarding Level 4 lockdown.
That was Deputy Leader Brooke van Velden from the ACT Party.
That was The Wire.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki. That brings us to the end of the show, the Wednesday show, for another week. Huge thank you to everyone who spoke with us for the show today. Marcus Jones, Tali Williams, Kiri Nuku, and a senior nurse currently working in Level 4 lockdown, as well as the ACT Party's Deputy Leader, Brooke van Velden. Thank you so much for all of you. Thank you so much to all of you for tuning in and sending through your texts and giving me a call. Always love hearing your feedback and hearing what you think about the pieces on the show. Huge shout out to Zazie and Francis. That is their second lockdown show. Amazing work. It is truly such a feat to produce a show from home. So thank you so, so much to them. And then I want to say, as I have been saying throughout the week, massive thank you to the newsroom for continuing to work so diligently and produce news from home. Huge love to them, and a massive shout out as well to the wider BFM family for producing awesome shows from home as well. It is so great to hear everybody still getting on board and bringing you some awesome stuff to listen to throughout this time. But that's enough of me. Up next is Bridges 1-4 show. That is a lockdown show. I hope you're keeping safe and well out there. I'm getting my vaccine. Woohoo! Stay tuned to BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.